The day after opening day. Welcome to the Windy City Podcast. Let me touch real briefly on the Cubs and White Sox before we get to a very special interview today. Alex Honnold coming up. One of the benefits working at FanSided, outside of the incredible people that I get to work with every day and the platform, is the amount of people who we get to interview from different walks of life. Alex Honnold, if you've been paying attention, you probably have at least at some point come across him. He was on 60 Minutes. He's been on Jimmy Kimmel. The greatest solo climber of all time. How somebody scales up a mountain without any ropes and somehow, some way, teaches themselves to handle that fear, just to do that when one wrong step, their life is over. And so many who have tried this end up dying premature deaths. Just fascinating guy to talk to. So Alex is coming up here in a matter of moments. But, and I figured I'd put it out today because it almost feels like, at least for Cubs fans right now, it might make more sense to climb a mountain than watch this team play this year. And I get it. It's only one loss. But it's the Pittsburgh Pirates. The awful Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Cubs looked like the Cubs, swinging and missing and going batter after batter after batter without getting the ball out of the infield and losing on opening day 5-3. But I am here to remind Cub fans for just a brief moment of one thing. In 2015, they went to the NLCS. In 2016, they won the World Series. In 2017, they went to the NLCS. In 2018, they made the playoffs. In 2019, they won 84 games. Fire Joe Maddon, but they won 84 games. Collapsed at the end of the year, missed the playoffs. Terrible September. And then last year, made the playoffs again. They've been making the playoffs every damn year since 2015. Over half a decade. That is incredible, truly incredible. And I get that changes are coming right now, and it's disappointing they didn't win another World Series, but you got to take a step back a little bit and realize, wow, this has really been quite a period of Cubs baseball that any baseball team in all of baseball would sign up for. Now, the White Sox. Aaron Bummer. I heard him talking, I think, it was on the Score, or it doesn't matter. I heard it somewhere. And he said that, I'm hoping that I have a year where, or the White Sox bullpen has a year where we do not blow a lead the whole season. Like after six with the lead, the Sox are 99-0. Well, 0-1 after opening night, kind of hard to believe, and maybe some bad luck too. And Albert Pujols with a little chopper to third base and the run scoring, and the Sox blowing a lead on opening night. They're going to miss Eloy Jimenez. Every time I see Leury Garcia or whoever step in the box, it's painful. So I'm not saying it's going to ruin the season, but I noticed it last night. Lucas Giolito pitched well. He gives up a bullet off the bat of Shohei Ohtani in the sixth. He's kind of dancing around on the mound like, whoo, got through that one. And here comes Tony La Russa going to the bullpen. And when Ricky would come out there, he'd pat him on the back and be like, yeah, yo, great job, pat him on the chest, right? La Russa, give me the baseball. Get out of here. You just hung a slider and you're done. Give me a little different and maybe a little bit more ruthless. Tony's got his plan. And what I was impressed with there, start of the inning, going through the order for the third time, Steve Stone dialing it up that this is going to be a very tough inning. They're going through it for the third time. Well, La Russa was out in front of it, had his bullpen up. It wasn't like, oh, there's a bullet, now let me get somebody up. He was out in front and ready to go. But then Tony also, Nick Madrigal stole second base. It was clear he was safe. And Sir Tony, who has not been in the dugout for a minute now, not used to replay, did not challenge. That's not a good job. He was safe. It was obvious that's a runner in scoring position that the White Sox did not have. So E. Tony on opening night. All right, let's get to Alex Honnold. Cub fans, don't go free soloing just yet. They're only 0-1 But I figured today would be a good day to bring in Alex, who we talked to last week. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Alex Honnold, right now on DeWindy City Podcast.
Showtime.
From time to time, we come across someone who can do something so remarkable that it defies belief, and in this case, seems to defy gravity. It's the story of Alex Honnold. He's a 26-year-old rock climber from Sacramento, California, but not just any rock climber. He scales walls higher than the Empire State Building, and he does it without any ropes or protection. It's a kind of climbing called free soloing, and the penalty for error is certain death.
The next thing for you, the next big thing.
So I'm still working on quite a few different climbing goals. Actually, a few things just, I live in Las Vegas, a few things around here in Red Rock, a few big, sort of mountain adventures. But your introduction saying the best climber, whatever. I think if I've taken anything from the podcast that we've been working on from Climbing Gold, it's that we've gotten to interview so many of the best climbers over the last, 30 years. And really it shows sort of the breadth of the sport. I mean, a big point of starting the podcast was to explore, how wide the history of climbing is, basically. Because at various moments through time, there have been tons of other, best climbers ever. And they've all left impact in the sport in different ways. And so it's been really nice to chat with them and pull those stories together and use that to sort of show how climbing has changed shape over the years.
What are you most interested in learning from other climbers? Is it the mental side, the physical side, all of it? I mean, what really gets you excited to find out?
Well, I personally like to learn sort of the physical training side from other climbers just because that's more of my personal weakness. But in the podcast, we've been sort of exploring all aspects. Like we've focused quite a bit on inspiration and drive and like vision, like how some climbers see things that others haven't, and then how they act on that vision and wind up doing things that others thought were impossible. So through the podcast, we sort of explore all aspects of newness in climbing, the full richness of climbing. But I personally sort of geek out on the training side of it because I think that's what I need the most.
So you want to get stronger. That's one of your goals right now?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, just 2 days ago, I totally PR'd on some hangs and stuff. Is it classic, when you're training, you're like, whoa, I did something that I physically have never done before. And you're like, what's different? You're like, so exciting, Like basically, it's always exciting to break into new ground in some way. And for me, it's easier to do that physically, or it makes more sense to work on the physical side.
On the mental side, how do you explain to, I guess, someone like myself, like the approach, avoid, people are afraid to make a phone call. They're afraid to go for the next thing. And you've trained yourself that I'm going to go for something that's really, really scary, but it's something that I really want. Like what was that process like for you?
It's funny that you use make a phone call as your first example, because I really don't like cold calling people and I hate calling businesses. So I make my wife pretty much do all the phone calling in the family. It's like, she's the one that calls people out of the blue to be like, hey, so we have this issue and we don't really know how to resolve it. Like, what should we do? And so, I mean, really, it's just a sign that no matter how well practiced you are in one thing, it doesn't necessarily translate to everything else, because I'm very good at managing, fear around climbing, sort of physical fear. I'm very good at putting myself into uncomfortable physical situations and feeling comfortable. But that doesn't necessarily translate to cold calling somebody and chatting about things that you need,
So it's not a one size fit all. I figured out my fear here, but that doesn't, okay, I got it.
Though I do think that the tools that you learn through climbing, you can sort of apply a little bit. Like if I have to, I can be like, okay, I'm going to make this call because I know I can handle it, But I still don't want to, by nature, it's like, that's still just not my thing.
Yeah. Just sticking to climbing as far as the fear part where like, because I've heard you talk about it as I'm going through, by the way, that you're huge success on all your YouTube videos have millions and millions of views. People are so curious about you, which the introvert part of your personality, like just seeing how much interest is in you, if that's comfortable. But more so, you talked about like when I'm getting ready for a huge climb, I go through the mental part of getting there. Like, how do you actually know, like, okay, I'm ready, even though there's got to be some part of you that's still thinking that maybe you're not.
Totally. I mean, that is interesting how you prepare for something that's never been done before, because you can kind of feel ready, but then you're like, am I ready? Because nobody's done it. So, like, what are the steps required? But I think for free soloing, for climbing big routes without a rope, I mean, the obvious sort of like go, no-go step is sort of like this gut check. Like, does it fill you with fear? Like, if you look up at the wall and you feel sick to your stomach and you're like, oh, that like makes you feel dread on the inside, then you're probably not ready. Whereas if you look up at something and you feel almost giddy excitement, like this is going to be incredible, this is going to be so fun. I mean, kind of, I guess the point is when something transitions from fear to fun, then you know you're on the right track.
Interesting.
For something like El Cap, I mean, I wanted to climb it for 10 years, but for the first, you know, 9 of those, I'd look at it and I would feel sick to my stomach and I would feel a lot of anxiety. I was like, you know, it's very, very scary. But then by the end, it started to transition to like, this is going to be incredible. You know, like this will be fun.
And you got there by just going up with rope and just learning the path, basically. Is that how you got yourself comfortable?
Yeah, mostly. For El Cap specifically. I mean, other free solos that I've done in the past, you know, sometimes I go up with less preparation and just have an adventure, see how it goes, like figure things out. But for something as difficult as El Cap, I kind of knew that I needed to have it perfectly memorized and rehearsed and you know, dialed in. So I just like put in, I mean, basically just brute force effort, you know, just go up and work on it over and over and over until it becomes almost routine and you know that you can do it.
So would you could call yourself kind of a process guy? Like I'm comparing you to other athletes in my mind right now, Alex. Kobe Bryant would say that I'm not the most talented, like, or I've heard like Ray Allen, one of the greatest NBA, I'm a big basketball guy. Like I didn't feel like I was a good shooter. I had to get in the gym and shoot. It was just from work. I don't think you look at yourself as like this supreme talent, whereas I think everybody else probably sees you that way.
Yeah, but everybody else watches, you know, a 2-minute YouTube video and they're like, oh, that, you know, he must just walk up and climb rocks. That's crazy. But they miss the 25 years of climbing full time. You know, I mean, climbing 6 days a week for 25 years, I mean, that's quite a bit of effort. You know, that's putting a lot of time and energy into a sport. It's like, obviously, I think it is fair to say that I'm very much a process guy. But I think that what has made that easier for me is the fact that I love climbing and I love going out and doing it all the time. And so it makes the process easy because, you know, I'm excited to train, I'm excited to climb. It's like, you know, it's fun to go outside.
Did you ever have the thought in your head, I'm going to make this a career somehow, some way, I'm just going to make money doing this? Or did that just kind of develop organically and here we are?
Yeah, totally organically. I never, especially when I was young, there wasn't really a climbing industry. There's no way to make a living as a climber. And actually, that's a big part of what we explore in the podcast is sort of that transition. Because, I mean, the reason we even did the podcast is because the sport has changed so much over the 25 years that I've been a climber, that it seems like an important time to sort of check back in and see where it's come from, where it's going, and like what's happening as the sport grows.
So it's an Olympic sport now. Like if you try to see the future of where you think it is going, what would you say?
I mean, it's hard to say, but all signs seem to be pointing towards greater growth. I mean, you know, COVID aside, the facilities in urban areas now is just way more popular, way more crowded, way more people getting into climbing. And you know, I don't know. I mean, basically climbing has been taken off and going to the Olympics is certainly going to help that, I think. And so we'll just see. I mean, you know, presumably it's going to wind up pretty mainstream. Like people would just go climbing in cities routinely.
I saw that you know, were instrumental with Emily Harrington and her climb. She is crashing into the wall and she's bleeding. She had a whole team around her with you being there, I guess, but you know, bleeding off the wall, like, okay, I'm going to keep going. That seems like a pretty big moment in time.
No, she definitely had a few sort of unfortunate, incidents. I mean, it's kind of just bad luck because she took sort of a routine fall, but just happened to poke her head basically, but then it just sort of gashed and bled everywhere. And it was totally, I mean, it's one of those really unlikely events that, you know, very rarely happens in climbing, but then, you know, it just happened to happen while she's, you know, performing at this elite level on this life goal. And so obviously she just banged her head and carried on. I'm sure that was not part of the plan because that's, you know, it's all pretty wild. But the big takeaway from that though is that the thing about what Emily was doing, free climbing Golden Gate in a day, was that she was using a rope. So she's able to push herself much closer to the limit. So she can sort of afford to take big falls, you know, get injured, persevere. You know, she was able to push much, much closer to her physical and psychological limits because she has, you know, a rope there as backup. And it just basically means that it's a different kind of challenge. You know, it's like she's able to really like plumb the depths of her possibility, you know, like she can really push herself all the way to the limit. And the thing about free soloing is that you just can never really push yourself that deep because if anything happens, you die. And so, you know, the thing about me free soloing El Cap is that I had to put in way, way, way more preparation. You know, I had to spend way more time up there. I had to, you know, I've climbed El Cap over 100 times, I think, via different routes and with ropes. And, you know, I think Emily has climbed El Cap, you know, now a handful of times, but let's say like 4 or 5 or something. And you know, I mean, it just shows that the difference in preparation required to take something on without a rope, you know.
Have you ever been close without ropes? We're like, oh man, that was, I mean, I was right there, but you know, somehow, some way, I just got myself through it.
I've had a couple sort of near misses and lucky moments and things. Most of the near misses actually aren't on anything dramatic and extreme. They're on easier terrain where you break a handhold. You know, I've had a lot of times where I'm climbing like something in Yosemite where I pulled a really big rock off and basically started to teeter backward and then managed to sort of shove the rock back and sort of catch my balance and like, you know, not fall off basically. But, you know, there have been a few moments like that. But most of the time though, if I get into situations that I really don't feel comfortable where the route seems too hard or I've had situations where I get lost, you know, where I think I'm reading the topo correctly, the map, but I wind up like on the wrong part of the face and I'm like, this doesn't seem right. But so in cases like that, I typically just climb back down. It's really important to be able to down climb at a very high level if you're a free soloist, because you basically have to be able to escape anything.
That's super interesting, because I was watching your 60 Minutes piece, which is now 10 years ago, and whoever the expert was, I forget his name, but he's like, once you get to this point, you can't come back down. But you're saying that you actually have built the skill that you can.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. The 60 Minutes piece specifically, they were using John Long, this commentator, who actually is one of the people that we interview in Climbing Gold, because he is a legend of, like, he was the first person to climb El Cap in a day in 1975, I think. And so, you know, he was a visionary of climbing for his time, but he's also a very, let's say he's a strong storyteller. You know, he's like a very strong personality who kind of very dramatic. So he was perfect to narrate that with like, this is crazy, this is insane. But the route that I was following, I'm pretty sure I could have hiked to the summit and climbed back down it, you know, if I had to, like if I was compelled to for some reason, you know, because the fact that we were filming it, I knew that I had to keep it relatively within my comfort zone. You know, it had to be something that I was like, I know that I have this under control and I can manage it up or down either way, no problem.
So that's the other part too, because the Nat Geo piece, your friends are so nervous and doing, are we going to film our good buddy? And if something happens here, then we're going to have an, you know, like they just didn't want to impact your journey. And then you have to carry the anxiety, like, I don't want to let these people down. I don't want to let myself down.
That's the challenge of filming free soloing, is that nobody wants to watch it. You know, like nobody wants to be there. The camera people don't want to be there. Like, I want to be there because I'm having this incredible experience, but nobody else is having a good time. Like, everyone else is stressed and they're on edge. And the challenge, I think, of filming free soloing for the filmer is that they have to be a totally neutral mirror, because they can't encourage you to do something and they don't want their emotions to discourage you. So they have to just stay totally placid and just film whatever's happening. Because, you know, you don't want to be the camera guy that's like positive, who's like, yeah, you can do it, get some, you know, because you don't want to encourage somebody to go to their death. But at the same time, you don't want to just like start crying a little bit when the person ties their shoes because you're so scared, you know, because then obviously as the climber, I would see that and be like, oh, my buddy is crying, looking at me like maybe I shouldn't be up here. Like this is stressing everybody out. So it's a really hard position for the camera people to be in. And I think that's something that in the film Free Solo, they did an incredible job of, is just staying totally neutral for 2 years basically, and sort of documenting the process while keeping their own emotions in check. Because I mean, in the film, you know, you see a couple times where like the camera guy can't watch or the camera guy walks away and those kinds of things. But from my perspective, like I personally never saw that. Like for me, they were always totally neutral. Just like, oh, how are you doing today? Yeah, beautiful day in the valley. You know, just kind of like pleasantries. If you're polite and interactive, you know, like, oh yeah, it's a really nice day. Like, oh, I love Yosemite in the spring. But just no input as to whether or not soloing is a good idea, you know?
Yeah. So I have no climbing talent whatsoever. If my life depended on it, that in 5 years or 3 years that you that and I was working with you, that could you get me to with ropes, obviously, could you get me through, I don't know about El Cap, but something is like, is that even possible for a regular person?
Yeah, for sure. If you wanted to climb El Cap in 3 years with ropes and equipment and everything safely, for sure, with expert instruction, you could do that, no problem. Not to say that you can necessarily lead the whole thing, but if you were with somebody, like you could handle it just fine. Like you could get up it.
What's the biggest thing that somebody like that would have to learn? I'm assuming it's the fear part or no?
It's hard to say. A lot of that is personal, because some people just aren't really afraid. You know, some people just trust the equipment intrinsically and they feel comfortable and they love the adventure. They love the exposure. And that's kind of where I've come from, is I've always loved being in that position. So, you know, like I love looking out and seeing, you know, the mountains around me. But the thing is, for that to work, you have to fully trust the equipment. You have to know that the ropes aren't going to break. You have to know that your harness is safe. Like, you know, and so it typically takes some time to build up that level of trust.
I'm trying to go back to like 5-year old Alex, where like you're climbing all over the place. Like, so is there something that was there that the normal 5-year old doesn't have, and then you just wanted to keep going? Do you ever think about that? Like, what was it that got me started?
I don't know. I mean, part of it, I think, is that I do love getting on top of things probably more than the average person. Like, I love getting to the top of the tree or getting on top of a play structure, like summiting thing, you know, even get just like running up to the top of the pile of dirt. You know, it's like, oh, I love like getting on top of something. It's like, it's just fun to, you know, the view, the exposure, the air. It's like, I just love being up high. But yeah, I mean, part of it, I think, is just, you know, I loved that position, and then I started climbing, and then you just sort of start down a path, you know, you just keep doing it. Cause the thing is, day in and day out, I love going climbing all the time. You know, like, I'll go climb this afternoon and then train this evening, and I'm like, and I'm excited about it, you know, cause I didn't get to climb yesterday. So I'm like really chomping at the bit. You know, it's, I think that 25 years in, if you still have that kind of love of the sport, then, you know, obviously you're on a good track, you know?
So you don't anticipate stopping doing what you're doing anytime soon?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the specifics of what I'm doing may change. Like, you know, if I have a family, maybe I'll free solo a little less, or like, maybe I'll focus more on, you know, mountain climbing versus sport climbing, or actually more likely I'll focus more on sport climbing than mountain climbing, because sport climbing is closer to home and more casual. But yes, I wouldn't be surprised if like the types of climbing I do shift a little, but it's hard to imagine not climbing. Like, I love going climbing. It's, you know, it's all I do.
Congrats on the podcast. For just last one here, what do you want people to know if they're going to be checking out Climbing Gold? Why should they listen outside of the fact that there's going to be awesome stories? What would you say?
Well, honestly, I think they should listen for the awesome stories. I think that Climbing Gold is an incredible overview of climbing history and a glimpse at the climbing future. It's basically just timeless stories from climbing across the whole continuum. Pretty exciting.
It's awesome. I've checked out the first two episodes. You guys allowed me a little free preview. It was super enjoyable and great to talk to you, Alex. Congrats on all your success. Keep on going and stay safe. And we'll talk to you again, I hope.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time. Have a good day.